Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Hey guys, it's Karen Pugliese, your friendly neighborhood editor-in-chief of Candland here. We just passed an important anniversary, August 1st. That was the one-year anniversary of the day Meta banned all Canadian news from Facebook and Instagram. And if you didn't notice, you're not alone.
As it turns out, 78% of Canadians, 78%, are blissfully unaware that news has disappeared from those platforms.
That according to a study released last week by McGill University and the University of Toronto. And so, I want to talk about Justin's plan to save the news. No, not that Justin. Actually, Justin Lang, reporter, former host of Oppo, Bad Boy, and occasional host of Shortcuts, my buddy Justin Lang, because Justin Lang has become radicalized.
Okay, I lose my mind. Like, I know I keep saying this. Like, I know I sound so much like I'm having a breakdown, but I truly believe that the Liberal government now sees ambition as a liability. I have only recently sort of woken up and become radicalized to how bad things are.
And this is what did it. He interviewed Pascal Saint-Ange, who has just crossed the one-year mark as Canadian Minister of Heritage. In that year, we saw massive layoffs at Bell Media, the end of Vice, more bleeding at Global, and the near death of major newspapers at Atlantic Canada, and so much more. Here's a piece of that interview as Justin and the minister met up for coffee at a busy cafe.
And, you know, just to be upfront, like, the state of the media is not great right now.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big surprise for you to hear.
No.
You know, and we're at a spot now where the Online News Act is finally coming into effect, at least partially.
Yeah.
Things are worse than ever.
You think?
I think so. Okay.
You think? She said, you think? I'm still trying to process that. Okay, so last week Ling turned that interview into a column for the Toronto Star that ran with the headline, Justin Trudeau tried to save journalism, this is why he failed. So do the Liberal media bailouts really deserve an F? And what responsibility do the media bear for our own demise? Can anyone save news? And if not, can we at least save Justin Ling? Okay, I'm making light of it. But you have to laugh or cry because things are really that sh** in media, which you probably know. But much to Justin's distress, it seems the government does not. Justin Ling and news editor Jonathan Goldsby debate whether or not the Liberal policies deserve a failing grade and to ask if they do, what else is there? They join me in just a moment. Wait for it. Justin Ling, thank you for joining me and news editor Jonathan Goldsby. Welcome both.
Hello.
Hello. I'm so glad you're here. Justin, I just got to tell you, I read this article that you published in The Star last week. And I've got to say, like, it was, the most dismal and confusing lead that I've ever seen. You sit down.
What a compliment.
Well, not because of you. You sit down with the Heritage Minister and you say to interview her about the state of the media and you say, it seems that things are worse than ever. And her answer is, you think?
Yeah, and it was a very genuine, like, you think? Like, really? You think things are worse than ever in Canadian media? And it was an off-kilter way to start the interview, for sure.
In print, I couldn't tell if she meant, like, really or no shit. But you say she meant really?
It was quite earnest.
Oh.
It was an auspicious start to the interview, because it sort of betrayed the fact that the government sort of does think things are working out and that they have done a relatively good job.
I think for those of us sitting inside the media, it feels a little different.
I mean, maybe things are probably better than they would otherwise have been without the government's intervention, although there are people who would disagree with that. But yeah, that she would not perhaps realize that, you know, in spite of the efforts they have made, that the decline would be continuing. So she seemed to believe that they had actually reversed the decline, or at least resulted in a plateau.
Over the course of the conversation, it's also pretty clear that she's drank the Kool-Aid to some degree. I mean, I've been writing about this for ages now. The liberals are living in a fantasy world where things are much better than they actually are, right? Like, they are, the liberal government, in many respects, is drinking its own bathwater and has convinced itself that things are not as dire, that people are not as angry, and that, you know, the environment is not as toxic as it truly is.
You know, it's funny you say, like, drinking their own bathwater. I was going to say, like, believing their own press, if there was any press left for them to read and believe. So yeah, from where I'm sitting, I've got a completely different picture. It's like since 2008 to June 2024, 521 local news outlets closed. Those are the latest numbers from the Local News Research Project at Toronto Metropolitan University. And I can't even remember, like, how many layoffs, how many cuts, like, from legacy media. I can't even count. I've lost track.
I go back to the gallery now, and it is just so much smaller than it used to be. Like, I would hazard a guess and say that the number of people actually on the Hill in the foyer questioning MPs is maybe a fifth of what it was when I showed up there around 2014. Like,
how many bodies? How many people?
I walk into the foyer now and I see, like, camera guys included, maybe 10 to 12 people, whereas you used to see dozens. It is drastically smaller of a contingent than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago.
But back in the day when I would go up, you would see like a minister being scrummed or a prime minister being scrummed. Like, they were just surrounded.
And there was always Coward's Alley. There was a back door you could take, but everyone knew you took it and you got slammed for doing it.
I forgot
and
that.
And now there's 1,000 Coward's Alleys. It's so easy to escape getting scrummed these days. And there's also just not enough bodies to do the scrums. So, like, you know, this is just a very, I think, a tangible example of what happens when you have fewer people, when you have fewer bodies doing the job.
But in all fairness, the Liberals' policies, and maybe we could go through and we could just review, like, what they were, why they were so controversial, and, like, how well they worked.
Put her on life support for a time to, that, you know, in a way that is to extend the life, has bought everyone a few more years. So you can see, like, it's definitely, things are not shrinking as rapidly as they would otherwise be.
We started out with this idea of this $595 million, what people called like a media bailout plan.
Yeah, the biggest portion of which was the Journalism Labor Tax Credit, which would subsidize the salaries of eligible newsroom employees to the tune of up to like $13,750 a person. Although last year that was raised to a maximum of nearly $30,000 per person.
Yeah, so Justin, I mean, like, that worked, right? Like, that helped.
It managed decline. And this is what I think we lose in this conversation all the time. Because the government went and did something that averted, you know, to use St. Olsha's language from our conversation, it was slamming on the brakes right before you drive into the ravine. Then they kind of converted this, facing a huge amount of opposition.
That was the criticism of it, that you're buying the journalists, you're paying off the journalists.
And so it's set up this dichotomy between, you know, the Liberals' kind of courageous and ambitious plan to save the media and the Conservatives' opposition to everything and the allegation that, you know, the Justin Journos had been bought and paid for.
When I was president of the CAJ, or the Canadian Association of Journalists, that, like, we were really critical of this whole bailout thing is that there was no accountability to it. There was no sense that you couldn't take the money and then lay off a bunch of journalists and give yourself a bonus. And that was something that we asked for that the government didn't provide.
I'm a recent convert to being as sort of insane as I am about this. Like, I have only recently sort of woken up and become radicalized to how bad things are, because I agree with you. Like, thinking back to this bailout, I was really critical of the idea that we were just underwriting Postmedia's ability to pay off, you know, Daddy Hedge Fund in New Jersey, because like that's a very reasonable concern. That was a CAJ's concern, and it was a very valid concern because that's what they went and did.
I feel like we should give it a grade. Like, was this a fail, or was it like, is it a B? Is it a C? Like, what?
The Journalism it's Labor F. Tax Credit?
They're all Fs.
Really? Yeah, I mean, but the grade you assigned it, I think, depends on what was the original assignment here. Like, if the original assignment was saving media, then F, maybe a D. I don't know. I F. But if the assignment was merely slow the decline, I don't know, C plus, B? Sure.
I think this came in as imperfect as it was, but there was no exit plan for it. You know, there was no plan to keep you from going back to the trough every year. That was the big criticism I had of it, is like, are you really going to forever keep funding journalist salaries? Is this something that the government is now in the business of for the future of as long as our democracy lasts?
I think that's a great question. And I think we should actually try and answer it, because the government doesn't want to talk about, like, the government doesn't want to be asked that question, because the government's line is no. Like, this is just temporary. You're going to figure it out. Everything's going to be okay. Like, there will be a magic fairy that will come and sell us beans in a couple of years and it will fix the whole industry and all the advertisements are going to come back.
So just to recap, an F from Justin, somewhere between an F to a B from Jonathan, just depending on the judging criteria. But for me, you know, the lack of accountability just makes it an F, even if it did help. Well, they did try to do something else. And there was this other program that they opened up that was essentially part of that bailout plan. And that was making it easier for some media to get charitable status. And the idea there was to kind of like borrow from the American model, where foundations will sometimes give large donations into media organizations. And this would be a new revenue source.
There have been some journalism outlets over the years, like The Walrus notably, that have said...
Aboriginal People's Television Network.
Oh, yeah, that are saying like, well, we are an educational institution in a sense. And that's the activity we primarily engage in is education. But what they did and what they're asked to do and what they do is they created a new category of thing that is like a charity.
It was supposed to change the business model. It was supposed to find this alternative source of funding. And how well has that worked?
I mean, again, what are we grading on? Was this supposed to revolutionize media? No, right? Like, this is a good idea. Like, let me just say up front, good idea. But the idea that we're going to fix this media crisis through turning ourselves into literal charity cases does have a certain problem at the core of it, doesn't it? And on the flip side of that, it is finding the wrong solve for a very serious problem, right? Like, let's go back and re-diagnose what the actual impact of losing this, you know, these thousands of daily newspaper jobs are. It means there are fewer people in Parliament Hill, like we talked about. There are fewer people on the cop beat covering the fire that was down the street, covering City Hall, covering provincial legislatures, a job that is becoming quickly extinct across the country, right? Like, the day-to-day nuts and bolts, unsexy stuff that no foundation wants to pay for.
That is my problem with it, is there's a thumb on the scale in news now, and I don't like it. And it's not that the foundations are meaning to go in and interfere with journalism, but they are interfering with journalism the way they fund. Because you're right, none of them are going in and saying, you do journalism and I just want to fund journalism. Or if there is somebody doing that, I don't know who they are. I haven't seen them. What they are doing is they're saying, I'm interested in climate change, or I'm interested in reconciliation. So I will fund stories on that. They are influencing the direction of media. And because there are some media outlets that are almost so dependent, like at least a third dependent on foundations now.
Outside of Quebec, the highest profile registered journalism organizations, that is to say outlets with this charity-like status, are the Narwhal, the Local, Canadian Jewish News, and New Canadian Media. I mean, the Narwhal obviously does famously an extremely important Queen's Park report. Like, they have done some of the most consequential legislature coverage in the province in years.
Just to bring it back, like, one of the core problems of this foundation model is also one of the core problems of the subscription model, which is that you need to go find people who want to pay for the thing. And what do people want to pay for? They want to pay for things that reflect their own interests.
Can we talk about the LJI that launched in 2019. That was another one of the Liberals' ideas.
The Local Journalism Initiative.
Local Journalism Initiative, yeah. That one provided Canadian news organizations with up to $60,000 per journalist in salary.
Basically, to cover underserved beats, which could either defined as a news desert, so an actual like geographic location that was not receiving adequate coverage, or it could be defined as a particular area of coverage that was not receiving adequate attention.
So you would write this application and you would put it into this kind of arm's length kind of board. And they took a look at these applications. And right now there's 400 is the count that I saw. Local Journalism Initiative reporters scattered in newsrooms throughout. What do we think of that program?
I mean, in terms of pound for pound, like, listen, a thing that gets a journalist working in a underserved jurisdiction is good, right? Again, we're talking about 400 jobs. That does not begin to fill the gap that we've faced.
I think the idea was that it sort of created a network, and I love the idea and that it's something that would be everything. I think is licensed under a Creative Commons license. So I do love the idea of that, of working as a newswire.
Yeah, Creative Commons means that the stories are a shared resource and free for other news outlets to publish. But that was actually a problem in the way, because those news outlets that got the subsidized journalists didn't own the copy. So it really didn't do anything to drive eyeballs to their publications or help build a subscription base. It was good in the way that it was very much coming from the newsrooms, and that it did seem to be a fair process for small and large newsrooms, and that the decisions were being made by an arm's length group that are involved in journalism. And so it had a little bit less of that feeling of government creep, although it was really, again, criticized by this is Trudeau buying journalists.
And listen, I think of all of the things, like, I'm less angry at this one.
Yeah, but you gave everything an F. What do you give it, Goldsby?
I give it a B. Honestly, I think it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is filling these news gaps, whether it actually helps the individual outlets. I mean, it sounds like it's often a pain in the ass for the individual outlets to administer and everything, and there are all kinds of frustrations with it, but it seems like it's generally doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I give it a B. I don't like it being a forever program, but I give it a B. Okay, one more program. Just how do we feel about that Online News Act?
Basically, it's Canadian legislation modeled on Australian legislation that basically it's a way of saying, well, Google is basically getting so much of the advertising revenue, most of the advertising revenue that you would previously go to news outlets, other organizations, and now they have to pay those give those organizations just a bit of a fee. And it's a very weird roundabout way to avoid directly taxing and regulating.
In practice, we're looking, you know, rewind the clock 100 years, we're looking at, you know, Standard Oil and the big railway companies and saying, okay, you've clearly developed a trust here. You've clearly developed an anti-competitive monopoly or oligopoly, and we're tired of it. Please give us a little bit of money and we'll let you keep doing it. Like, that's where we're at, right? Like, we have lost all of the ambition to take on big corporations, and instead we have sat around and gone, ooh, we wish you wouldn't. Can we have a little bit of money? Like,
that characterizes,
how pathetic.
That characterizes the Canadian government's approach to most industries, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does. Groceries, telecos, railways, airplanes.
Yeah, I think Commons did a whole season about this.
So what do we grade this one, Jonathan?
Can we give like an incomplete grade at this point? It seems too early to say.
It could be an incomplete, but it is off to a bad start.
They're all Fs.
So what are our bright ideas, eh? Let's just get down to it. You wrote an article. You said Justin Trudeau has failed to save journalism. So can you, another Justin, can you be the better Justin? Tell us.
Yeah, I mean, like,
can you, a literal Justin Journo.
Yeah, Justin, how would you save journalism?
You know, like, the one of the solutions that I think everyone is fixated on, and I understand why, is just wildly increase the subsidies. Stop around with all of these little rinky-dink, tiny little, you know, band-aid solutions. Create a big old pot of money that is obscenely expensive and just give it to outlets. Like, that's what Europe does. I appreciate that people hate that, and I understand. I kind of hate it too. The other things, will be less quick, less efficient, more complicated, more messy, but are probably better ideas. That includes antitrust cases against Facebook and Google and potentially others, Amazon, TikTok. You can run down a whole list. It means algorithmic transparency. It means tough regulations for the ad tech market. It could, if you really want to get crazy and nationalist about it, it could create, creating a domestic mandated Canadian ad tech market. Ooh, that could be fun. It would mean there's a whole bunch of like tinier things that you can mean, you know, the government of Canada creating an obligation to serve all of its advertising directly through publishers, not through ad tech platforms or social media companies, which could push potentially hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising money directly to the platforms and publications and TV outlets themselves. Hey, that could be fun. It could mean like, you know, I heard someone from News Media Canada recently point out that most provinces do not exempt newspapers from recycling fees. Hey, look, that's a little thing we could do. There are things we could do here that range from really big to really small that if we do all at the same time, will, within a couple of years, have a tangible, noticeable benefit. But if it doesn't start with the premise that you have to challenge the thing that screwed up our entire market to begin with, it's just not going to work.
I mean, we get into the larger, I mean, I think one thing that liberals, a lot of people have found themselves, and maybe Canada's found itself in, this weird little in-between space where simply by not having the market power of the European Union or the United States, Canada, in a few times, has had the courage to threaten regulation or whatever. Their companies launch surprisingly credible threats to say, okay, we just don't, you know, it's just not worth the trouble for us to serve your market anymore. Goodbye, as Facebook has done. And I mean, maybe it'll likely become, or hopefully would become easier after other jurisdictions have done it, and that they maybe have already developed systems that accommodate, and we could, you know, whatever the rules
of the European Union. We could join the EU program. Like we could sign on to their regulation efforts.
We could do that?
Absolutely. Of course we can. Like we can all, we have in the past. I mean, we could talk about international treaties in this regard, which could like, you know, we could talk about bilateral trade agreements. We could talk about revising CETA. We could talk about revising USMCA. Like we have lost all imagination or desire to do big things, but this is one of the biggest transnational, international monopolies, oligopolies that is corroding our ability to have free and open markets. There's no reason why this is what international treaties are for. Like trade agreements are for this thing that we're facing right now.
So you said something there, Justin, about we've lost all imagination, and I kind of, you let me listen to tape of your interview with Minister Saint-Ange, and I didn't get the sense that in any way was she as fired up to go do these things as you are.
Well, of course she's not. I truly believe that the Liberal government now sees ambition as a liability, and they see salvation for their own political fortunes through rhetorical tap dancing, not through actually solving problems.
What happens to everything when Pierre Poilievre gets elected?
I mean, he is suffering under the other side of the same fallacy that the Liberals are. I mean, the Liberals, the quintessential part of the Liberal idea here is if we keep them on life support long enough, they'll innovate a solution. The conservative belief is if we let all of the legacy players die, entrepreneurs will come up and innovate a solution. But again, both of these are built on the shaky premise that innovation is possible in this rigged market. It's not. Nobody has been able to innovate a solution because if you need distribution, you have to go to Google, Facebook, and a handful of others, which will always punish you for doing good journalism.
I guess I wonder, was there something in particular or a series of things that caused you to sort of come around on this and around the Liberals' ability to effectively tackle position things more generally? I mean, for a long time, you had a reputation as being maybe particularly sympathetic to the Liberals and their methods of, like, well, they're in a difficult situation and their general approach to tinkering around the edges and improving things. And now you seem, maybe you're just maybe closer to what I'm expressing here, and now you seem a lot more as angry and incensed. Is there something in particular that shifted your view of this?
I mean, I don't think I've ever been sympathetic to the Liberals. I think I'm always sympathetic to people in power who are trying to do the right thing, right? Like, and this was true when I covered the Harper government. There were good people in that government who I felt enormous sympathy for as they were trying to manage some of these seemingly intractable problems. So, like, I have sympathy for people in government occasionally. Where I start to lose my mind is when government seems incapable of recognizing reality. And that's where we're at. The reality now is that things are truly horrible. When I hear Pascal Thénange go, oh, you think? Like, that makes me lose my mind. Because, yes, I do think. Yes, I do think we're truly and unbelievably f***ed. And you seem blithe to just how f***ed we are. The only way to win here is to fix and un-f*** this completely rigged international market. And in that respect, I think we have to look back to the last time we had to do this in the 10s and the 20s, and then again in the 80s and 90s with AT&T. We have to look to how we've fought against oligopolies and monopolies in the past. And until we get back to that and realize how corrosive and how corrupting these oligopolies and monopolies are, I think until we get there, we're just going to keep rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Can I take this in like a slightly different direction? I think the issue I keep hearing over and over again with all these attempts to save news are just that we're not solving for the right problem. Is a problem that maybe people don't need or care as much about journalism as we think they should. There's this report that came out from the Media Ecosystem Observatory. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, it's been 1 year since Meta banned Canadian news from Instagram and Facebook. And this study is looking at the impact of that. Since then, according to this report, Canadian news outlets have lost 85% of their engagement on Facebook and Instagram. You cannot get news on Facebook or Instagram anymore, and only 22% of Canadians even noticed that Meta banned news from Facebook and Instagram. It's like we disappeared and no one noticed.
Is that 22% of Facebook users, or is this all Canadians?
Cause I think it's all Canadians.
All Canadians.
What it indicates is how reliant we became on our tormentors to deliver our product. They bankrupted us, and then we relied on them to deliver our goods to consumers, and then they screwed us, like, big surprise. The government's effort to manage the decline has always ignored what the source of the decline was. We pretend like it's a force of nature, as though technology came along and suddenly news didn't have a business model anymore. But it's the opposite. For a while, we had more readers, more engaged users, more eyeballs, more markets than we'd ever had before by orders of magnitude. And yet we let two companies determine who visits our website, how we get paid for ads, and how much money they're allowed to pocket from the advertisers who place ads with us.
You know, is the problem maybe the erosion of trust in the media? Minister Thénange brought up something else in your conversation. She talks about the issue of declining trust in the media. And, you know, she told you that this is a job for journalists and not government. A few years ago, you know, the Pew Center, it was in 2018, said that trust was really high in Netherlands, Germany, Sweden. And a lot of that had to do with the programs promoting media literacy. But even in Sweden, with the rise of populism, attacks on media are just starting to impact that trust.
Okay, I lose my mind. Like, I know I sound somewhat like I'm having a breakdown.
But I'm not.
But maybe also, in a way, I am. Like, maybe I'm having a slow motion, like, you know, early first third of my career just breakdown. And, like, that's probably just where I'm at. But, you know, we go, oh, you know, why do people still trust the media in Sweden? Oh, they must have better media literacy. No, are you insane? They subsidize their media 2 to 3 times more than we do. Their media has not had a crisis of profit because they never had the decline that we had. It meant they kept their quality up. It meant they kept their faith and their trust with their readers. Like, if you actually, the European Commission just did a study about their media subsidies across their member states. And per capita, they subsidize just their public broadcasters. They subsidize them at a rate of over 2 times what Canada pays for the entire media sector. So both the CBC and all of our subsidies. Like, that is pretty stark.
But, you know, I have to push back on you because, I mean, some of it is political. Some of it is, you know, when Trump goes out there and says the media don't represent you, calls the media the enemy. We're seeing it in Sweden, too. There's been a far-right assault on the media, undermining their model. There's troll farms out there attacking media. We have the rise of disinformation sites that masquerade as media that are constantly saying, don't trust that mainstream media. So all of that is coming in. And at the same time, I think some of it has to do with the social media platforms that really do look for the lowest form of discourse, the most emotional, most angry discourse, and move it up to the top of our feed.
If the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star and other daily newspapers were still as robust as they were maybe, say, 25 years ago, I think it would still be facing the same challenges trust-wise for the same reasons. It would have a mitigating effect. I think bad faith arguments would still carry a lot of purchase.
Sure, but you know, listen, I'm not going to say that if we had a properly financed media, everything would be, you know, sunshine, lollipops, and everything would be coming up roses. Like, no, we would still have a ton of problems. But like, Karen, I think you're totally right.